I would like to introduce our first speaker. I am going to introduce Lisa. Honestly, I don't know a lot about her, but I heard she has a good message.
Yes, she does.
My name is Lisa, and I am an addict. Can we please take a moment of silence so we can invite loving and caring God of your understanding, my understanding, in here so that there's a clean message of hope and recovery, followed by the we version. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference just for today. As I said, my name is Lisa, and I am an addict, and I need to tell you right away, like, I am totally out of my comfort zone out here. In the darkness, I'm like, only in NA would I be somewhere like this right now. Unbelievable. It is beautiful as far as I can see, which isn't too far in front of my hand here. Kind of glad it's dark because I don't like doing this. I don't like speaking. So kind of take some of the pressure off anyhow because I could pretend like you guys aren't out there. The triangle of self-obsession, to me, it's been evident all my life, in my life. They say the core of this disease is the self-obsession that we have. Always based in fear of what's going to happen in the future. You know, what's going to happen? You know, will they like me? You know, if I do this? You know, always thinking about what other people are thinking about you. Well, about me. Resenting a lot of my past, a lot of things that I've done in the past, and actually losing the moment that I'm in right now because I'm worried about the things that are to come and the things that were behind me. And those, like I said, the triangle of self-obsession has been evident now that I can look back in my life, all my life. I remember in grade school even, you know, wanting to be different, you know, starting to tell those little white lies, stuff like that, so people like you. I think even in high school, I remember me and another friend telling all of our friends that we flew on a jet plane to New York on a shopping spree, you know, and expected everybody to believe us, you know, just because we were always trying to be somebody else. I was always trying to be somebody else. I didn't even know who I wanted to be. I just wanted to be someone else. Even through addiction, I can still see, you know, how evident it was at first, anyhow. Like, I always wanted to share my drugs because I wanted to have people around me. So I used those to keep people around me and get friends, actually. Towards the end, you know, that wasn't the truth anymore because that was when I was alone in the room by myself, as we all go to the bitter ends of that. For me, the fear part plays a lot more in my life today than the resentment of the past. You know, the past is the past for a reason, and through working some steps, I've realized that there's nothing I can do about it. I can't change it. You know, I can either choose to live in the past and be miserable because there's nothing I can do about it, or I can change what I'm going to do in the present. But that's where the hit comes in with the present. In the future, you know, worrying about what's going to happen next. And, you know, I try not to live my life that way anymore. Because of the steps and because of the people that I've surrounded myself with, most of the time I can stay out of that fear. You know, I just kind of like to roll with things now, whatever comes my way. They always say if you want to make God laugh, make a plan. And that's kind of how I feel. You know, if I make a plan, I know there's going to be something thrown into it, no matter what. You know, I have 5 children. You know, I work full time. I'm in school. And it's like there's always something that's going to mess up anything that I try to do. So I've learned just to, like, turn on a dime, you know, through this recovery process, only through Narcotics Anonymous. Because before, like, in early recovery, when something would go wrong, I would lose it. It was like a major catastrophe to me, you know. I remember even having up to 6 months clean, you know, going to a restaurant wanting to order spaghetti, and they don't have any more spaghetti. Well, geez, the world's going to end now because they don't have what I actually wanted. For the first time in my life, I'm able to make a decision, and now they don't have what I decided I wanted, you know. I don't know. It's only through this program that I'm able to relieve myself of a lot of the fear that I have. I know that most 99% of the things that I do and act out on are based in that fear. The fear of how people are going to react to me. Currently that's an issue that I'm having right now. You know, I have like 5.5 years clean. My clean date's March 22nd of 2005. And it's my stepson. I have a stepson that just moved in with us. He's 14 years old. And he's come from a pretty bad place. And, you know, I don't want to be the wicked stepmother. You know, I don't want to be that person. I'm more nurturing, caring, loving. You know, the kids know how far to push me. Whenever I turn into, what my youngest one will say, mean mommy. But with him, I'm so afraid of, because I know where he's come from. He's come from a very abusive situation, okay? He has come from, you know, mental abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse. You know, I just feel for him. And the only thing he really understands is, like, toughness. But my fear is, like, I don't want to be that person to be tough on him. And I know he's walking all over me. I know he's taking advantage of me. I know he's manipulating me. But I think, like, I'm the only person in his life right now. I mean, his father, too. But I'm, like, one of the people that he leans on, though, because he knows that no matter what, you know, I'm still going to be loving and nurturing towards him. When I do get mad at him, you know, he's in that state of mind where if, you know, I tell him that he's doing something wrong or I catch him lying and I tell him, you know you're lying and it's okay. I just want you to be aware of it because he's not even aware when he lies sometimes. And he thinks, oh, you don't want me here then. You don't love me. You know, he's in one of those kind of things. And I said, it has nothing to do with that. I love you no matter what. But I need to tell you what you're doing wrong so that you can try to correct it. But I see where he's coming from. So I just want to, like, I don't know, I'm like one of those people that think love can fix the world sometimes. And just trying to work on being more stern with him so that he doesn't keep taking advantage of me. But my fear is, you know, I don't want him looking down on me. And I haven't had those feelings, like, of worrying about what other people think for a long time. Once humility kicked in for me in this program, so, like, where I could get a little bit of self-acceptance to actually be comfortable in my own skin, it really didn't matter too much what other people were talking about or what they thought. And again, like in early recovery, I remember coming into the room and knowing that every single one of you were thinking about me, talking about me, you know, pointing at me, laughing at me the whole time, you know, I was in the room. And I was the only person that everybody was doing that to. And like I said, through getting some self-acceptance with myself and building, you know, a support group around me of people to tell me that that's just my disease talking to me, I've learned how to get a little bit better at that. Self-obsession hits me in many different areas, you know. I don't know. I guess it just depends on the company that I'm keeping. Like, whenever I'm in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I feel right at home because I know everybody in here is just like me. Sometimes I have to be out of my element and, you know, I'm with other people. This program has allowed me to become a nurse while I've been clean. And, you know, dealing with different people, I feel a little out of sorts. You know, I don't feel like I can freely express myself sometimes like I can in here. Like, I don't want to go to my patients' houses and tell them, you know, that I'm a recovering addict. I don't think they'd take it too well. And that kind of makes me uncomfortable because that fear sets in, you know, well, what if they do find out? And I shouldn't have to worry about that. But again, that's the self-obsession kicking in, you know, worrying about what they're going to think or what they'll do. And really, all I need to do is worry about my job and how I'm helping their family member. I know I'm just, like, babbling on. I'm so confused out here. I'm waiting for, like, some bear to jump out of the woods and attack me right now. The Jay over there promised me he got my back. Just run real fast. Right, Jay? Oh, geez. Oh, where my mind goes sometimes. It's a dangerous place to be by myself. I know that, and I surely don't want to take any hostages in there with me either. I don't know. For me, living in the moment is like one of the greatest things, one of the greatest gifts that I can have today, and being able to do that. For me, that like kind of squashes the triangle of self-obsession. Because if you're able just to be content and happy with right where you are for that moment, then there's really nothing to worry about other than that. Hard to do sometimes, easier said than done. But for the most part, like I said, through the working some steps and, you know, working with my sponsor and working with sponsees, you know, I've learned to just take things in stride pretty much and not worry too much about them. Earlier this week, talking about, you know, our sub pump broke down the basement and my other half's freaking out because he's going to have to take time out to fix it and everything. And I remember I'm down there, I'm saying, something's smelling down here and it's humming. And he comes down and unplugs it and he's, you know, goes a little bit nuts for a second. And I'm like, it'll be all right. And he's like, no, it won't be all right. I got to fix it, you know. But I'm just like trying to, you know, smooth it over. I'm like, well, it'll be all right. You know, it'll be all right for me. You know, I'm not the one that has to fix it, but, you know, I always just try to keep the peace. I'm trying to be, like, non-confrontational at any expense. Just, again, because of fear of reaction. You know, I still have that in me, the fear of reaction. Like, I just want everybody, like, can't we all just get along kind of mentality. And that never used to be me. I was the one out that was picking the fights just because I didn't like who I was. I didn't like how I felt on the inside, you know. Hurt people, that kind of thing. And, you know, now it's more like I just want to be content with where I'm at. I want to be content in my own skin. I don't want to worry about what's going to happen or what might happen or what if. You know, I try not to live in those anymore. When they do come up, I know that I act out something fiercely. That I know that it's just my disease again just rearing its ugly face, and it's always trying to do that at any given point in time. I really don't have too much more to share. Just kind of wanted to share my experience with the triangle self-obsession. You know, what it does to me, and like it's never going to go away. I mean, I can put it to rest, but I don't think it'll ever go away. I know even this week, again, I'll share one more thing with you. What we talked about in early recovery, we always had a standing joke. I'm talking about my significant other and I, about me going up into my tower with a handgun. Or not even handgun, machine gun, and, like, shooting everybody down that would try to come close to me. And, you know, I kind of distanced myself this week a little bit because I was tired. I had a lot of things going on. And, you know, thank God for text messaging. He texted me about, I thought you burnt the tower down. And I said, no, I just put it in a safe spot so I could pull it out later. You know, that's nothing ever really goes away. I don't put anything really away. I just keep it somewhere until I need it again, it seems like, or until it wants to rear its ugly face. But for the most part, like I said, through working steps, I'm able to control those things a little bit better. I'd like to thank this area for asking me to share. I'm sure this place is really beautiful in the daytime. I don't know that I'll be sticking around to find that out. No, but I really would like to thank everybody for listening. Thanks for letting me hold you hostage, and I am an addict named Lisa.
Okay, I would also like to introduce our second speaker. He is also from Newcastle. I'd like to introduce Jason.
What? Are you serious? I'm an addict named Jason. How's everybody doing tonight? Well, I'm going to tell you something. I got to tell on myself. When I first got here, I was a miserable, self-obsessed man, just disgrace. And you know, I usually start out with a prayer, but I'm not going to pray tonight because if you can't feel the presence of God in the air tonight, you need to pay a little more attention. Self-obsession right now doesn't even exist because I can't even see anybody's faces. So I'm just going to share some stuff, whatever God puts on my heart. You know, being clean, five and a half years, I learned a few things. I still don't know much, but I've learned a few things. And what I've learned is the core of this disease is self-obsession. And see, this triangle of self-obsession, it's so important they even made a pamphlet about it. Talks about how we come in here, and that's what our life revolves around. We're resenting and living in the past, and we're fearful of the future, and it makes us very angry in the present. And I was sitting there, and every time I'm in a bad mood, it pays me, it just does me so good if I just sit down and take an inventory of where I was and where I am today. And I was having all these thoughts about what it was like when I first got here as far as this self-obsession is concerned. And, man, I remember trembling with fear as I walked through the door of my first meeting. And I also remember the hugs that I got from some people that made me feel so welcome and made me feel like I was in the right place. I remember being so self-obsessed that as the topic, it was a topic meeting, and as each person shared, the closer and closer that it got to me, the more nervous I became. Until I was so clammed up, I couldn't even speak. I had to pass. I'm Jason, I'm an addict, I just choose to listen. I remember that kind of stuff. And God forbid, you know, even once you get here, you're here, you start going to some meetings, and then you see people start sharing, and you're like, and somebody says to you, oh, you got to do that in about a year. I remember that day too, and I was like, hell no. I ain't ever getting up in front of no podium. Last year, I got to say this too. Two years ago, I was here at Laurel Mountain Highlands, and I was helping my sponsor record the speakers, who, by the way, I must say that he's a big creep because he's the one that got me into this speaking engagement right now. And he's going to listen to this later, so I got to call him a creep. But anyway, this tree, she was talking about bears coming out of the woods. This tree fell down back here, okay? And it was crashing through the woods. I swear to God, it seemed like for 5 minutes straight. Women and people were running everywhere and screaming and yelling. It was total pandemonium. But as long as I don't hear no crashes back here, I think we're going to be okay. See, today, like, I'm free today. I'm free, not all the time, but I'm a lot more freer than I was in the beginning. As I said, when I came in here, it was so hard for me to just simply share. Just share where I was at. Or share on the topic. I hated myself. Living in the past. Thinking about all the people I've hurt. What a scumbucket I've been. The people I've robbed. Took advantage of. The children that I had. That I was no father to. Dreading. Living in the past, man. Making myself so angry in the present. This disease of addiction is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And I'm here to tell you, with 5.5 years clean, sometimes I'm stuck in that triangle of self-obsession, and I don't even recognize it. Until I come to a place like this, or a meeting, or I talk with my sponsor, that creep, and he tells me, well, he needs to share on that. That's right where he's at tonight. Well, I have to say that the creep is right. And I just, I don't care too much for this, for speaking, especially for strange people in strange places in the middle of the woods. But see, my sponsor understands this disease, and he's always trying to push me out there. And I'm a willing participant here, because I know when I get done, walk out of this place tonight, even if you guys don't like anything that I have to say, I'm going to feel better about me. So I continue to do this. See, this is the kind of stuff, when you stand up here and get naked and get vulnerable, that breaks the triangle of self-obsession. See, whenever a person's thoughts are centered in the past or the future, they're suffering a temporary loss of life. And that's what's so bliss about recovery. They teach us to live just in the moment. Because this moment, right here, right now, is truly the only thing that really matters. You know, we got things like just for today, we hear. just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Like, that's how simple the program is. Just for today, I'll have faith in somebody. I'll have faith in somebody who wants to help me with my program. Real simple stuff for us hard-headed assholes to follow. Because I'm going to tell you, if it wasn't simple, I wouldn't still be here, standing here with 5 years clean. You know, she was talking about, right now I could see what's happening to her. See, self-obsession jumped on her as soon as she sat down. And she's thinking she did such a horrible job. But what she fails to understand is the sanity that she just created for me. And I don't know if you guys were affected by what she had to say, but I know I was. And I thank you for that, babe. See, we're our own worst critics around here. Especially myself. I might get done tonight and the same thing will happen to me. That self-obsessed asshole will just come raging back. That rage, what was I just reading in the basic text? No, in How It Works and Why. I think it was in the sixth step. And it talks about this raging self-obsession that we all suffer from. And some of us suffer from it on deeper levels than others. And I remember, like, being in the meeting sometimes and just thinking that little side conversation off in the corner was about me. Like, I remember that kind of stuff. But this is so wonderful to have a 12-step program with these spiritual principles. Because we get to replace things, like we replace fear with some faith. Earlier in the week, I was reading something that said, the flesh is always based in fear. The spirit is always based in faith. And this program teaches me, this is a spiritual, not religious program, right? Right? And this program teaches me how to live a spiritual lifestyle. And with a spiritual lifestyle comes things like faith, trust, goodness, kindness, caring, sharing, happiness, love, all the good stuff that I didn't have no part of when I was out there getting it in, or in my early recovery. I didn't know how to express these things or receive them through working steps with my sponsor. See, well, it's something when you do, when you build a relationship with your sponsor. And I've been fortunate, I've built close relationships with a lot of guys in this program. And it's something when you sit down for a fourth and a fifth step, and you just reveal yourself to somebody else. You want to talk about freedom. See, that just completely smashes that triangle of self-obsession. Smashes it to hell and back. You're bringing the past out for what it really truly is. You're talking about it. And seeing that way, I was bad, but I wasn't really that bad. I was a good person just doing bad things. You know, and that first time I did a fourth and fifth step with my sponsor, like, it was amazing because I got in touch with things like vulnerability, that big V word that we're all so scared of. You know, and I'm going to tell you something, you're not going to get nowhere in this program if you don't become vulnerable, at least with one person. It's probably going to be your sponsor. That vulnerability is so important. Because the disease of addiction wants us to hide. It wants me to hide. It wanted me to hide my whole life. It didn't want me to go to meetings. It didn't want me to share honestly. Hell, tonight when I got here, it didn't want me to come up this podium and share a fucking thing. It wanted me to stay miserable, locked and loaded. So the only thing I'm thinking about is how miserable I am. So I eventually say, fuck it, and go get high. That's how that triangle of self-obsession works. That's how this disease of addiction works. It keeps you locked in that triangle, man. And when we come in here and we share openly and honestly with other people, you know, it is a we program. We start to break it. We bring those secrets to light, and they die in the light. Intimacy in the fourth and fifth step. Intimacy. If somebody would have said in early recovery to me, Jay, in about 3 years, you're going to learn to be intimate with another man, I'd have probably swatted him in the face. You know what I mean? I came in here like, here's the imaginary line. You don't cross this way. I won't cross that way. And we'll be just fine. I didn't come from a background where love was shown frequently. You know, another thing that she made me think about was how this disease was present in my life as long back as I can remember. Like, I remember, I don't know if you guys ever heard Usman share, but he talks about the addict's favorite national pastime, the art of comparison. And I remember when I came home from grade school, I don't know exactly what grade it was, and I used to be the king of the dominoes, man. We had that free hour for playtime. And I'd set dominoes up everywhere, man, off hopping off of tables and all kind of stuff. And I got all kind of, you know, praise for doing this, and all the kids liked me. Until that one girl that I liked told me I was fat. And I started looking around, like, comparing other kids to myself. That obsession starting to set in. I mean, yeah, man, she's right, I'm fat. You know, and then I went home, and my mom said, "What'd you learn in school today?" I said, "Mom, I learned I was fat." She said, "This was my mother's solution." God bless her; she's an awesome woman, but kind of that's another story. But anyway, she said, "Here, sit down, son. Eat something; you'll feel better." So, you know, like a good son, I listened to my mother. And that was probably, see, this is a program of addiction. And addiction, in my eyes, is a disease of ideas, attitudes, and behaviors. It includes a negative outlook on life, and it's always rooted in fear, insecurity, and a low self-esteem. And you could be addicted to anything. And anybody's welcome here. It's not about drugs. It's about not getting high or not using something to make yourself feel better, unhealthy anyway. And the first thing that I picked up as a young kid was food. And it made me fat, even fatter. And then what happens after that is, you know, you don't fit in with certain kids as you're going through the high school years. You get picked on, you get teased, you start getting angry. That self-obsession was on my ass so bad when I was in school. That I can't even explain how good it felt when I picked up that first drug. Like I had found something to take the obsession away, and I felt okay with me. I'm 5 years clean, which isn't an amazing thing. If you use drugs the way that I did, if you use people the way that I did, you know, it's something when we come into these rooms, we take that risk, and we start to actually recover. And that self-obsession and that triangle of self-obsession is broke. And the freedom that comes in that is better than any drug that I've ever done. And I've done quite a few. This place is special to me. I haven't missed it in 5 years. I come back every year. I'm not going to get to stay the night and go through the activities tomorrow. Because I got, she touched upon the 5 kids that we have at home. You know, it's taken a toll on me this past couple months. You know, about, 3 or 4 months ago, my 14-year-old son's mother just kind of dropped him off on the doorstep, said, here you go. I'm going to go do my thing, get high. So, you know, recovery teaches me I got to step up and be a man today. And it's not about me. So, you know, I kind of lost my mind there for a minute. Getting the room ready for him. I got to deal with his behavior problems too. And it's hard for me to keep hard for me to practice the patience and the tolerance that you guys have taught me in this situation. You know, when you see, it's something when you see a 14-year-old kid just self-destructing and making all the wrong choices, and you're like completely powerless to do anything about it. I will say this, though. I mean, it's not all bad. There is a lot of progress with this child in the last 3 or 4 months since we've had him. Because one thing I noticed when he first came in and when he first got at my house, you know, he had that, just that look of despair and just depressed spirit. You know, because I'm a firm believer in this program. Like, we have those spiritual attractions with one another. You know, once you start working a recovery program and learning to live by some spiritual principles, them negative people, which I choose to call like spirit robbers, you learn to like steer away from them. But anyway, like I seen this spirit on them, and it's starting to be lifted. Because I have to say, I kind of forced them. That's another story too. To play football, only because the only thing I seen. I assessed the situation and I looked at it for what it was. And he has it in him. He just doesn't have any self-esteem. And he's lazy. So I pushed him into, you know, going to football camp. And I tell you what, he came back, he was glowing. You know, just glow. He had this glow about him, like he really enjoyed himself and he was part of something. And I was thinking about that in terms of recovery in these meetings. And every time I come to a place, especially a place like this, I get them same feelings. I really do. Like right now, I don't know if you can see inside of me, but I'm kind of glowing. If you had seen me when I first got here, I was bitching about everything. I mean, there wasn't nothing I didn't bitch about. I cussed Rich out for making me pay $15 registration to be here 2 hours. You know, well, he kind of guilted me into it, but anyway. You know, that's just. And then I got a share on the triangle of self-obsession. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just evidence right there that God's working in my life. It really is, because when I'm just completely helpless to help myself, he sends somebody like my sponsor my way, or this guy Rick who I just met. I'm trying to get over my resentment for him putting me up here. I think I kind of like the guy, though. But just when I'm completely helpless to help myself, boom. And that's why I don't even think about it. If somebody asks me, it's just like, yes, I'll share. Because this God that I understand is full of faith, courage, honesty, trust, you know, stuff like that. The stuff that just wipes that triangle of self-obsession right away. And when I got the doors open to the God that I understand, I'm happy, joyous, and free. And see, the relationship that I have with the God that I understand is that just like a newborn baby. You know, you see a little child, you know, 3-4-year-old child running around. Like, I got this 4-year-old daughter who is, man, I never thought in a million years that I would ever be attached to something like this. This is something special that I've never experienced before. And it's the relationship that I have with the God of my understanding. It's just like the one that she has with me. She knows when the pain gets great enough, if she cries out, she has trust and faith in her father or her mother to provide her with what she needs. I have that relationship with the God of my understanding today. There's no money, property, or prestige averting her from her primary purpose. She's just happy, joyous, and free. That's the way I like to stay. But like I said earlier, this disease, they don't say it's cunning, baffling, and powerful for nothing. It'll have you locked up in that diseased up, self-obsessed box, and you won't even know it. That's why it's so vital for me to keep coming to these places to try 2.5 hours out in the middle of fucking nowhere and, like, get up at this podium and just talk, man. Just talk. Just put some stuff out there. Talking about growth here. You know, I don't know what recovery's like up in this area, but in our neck of the woods, it's a little bit, I like to say, watered down. And what I mean by that is you get a lot of people to come in, and they get the job, they get in a relationship, they get the nice car, place to stay, and they think they got it going on. But see, the best thing that this recovery process has given to me is being all right with me. You know, see, I don't have to have the woman on my arm or the nice car in the driveway to make myself feel better. I have a God that I understand today. I have good people like yourselves who love me when I can't love myself. You know, sometimes, I don't know if you guys have days like me, sometimes, like, she threw me right under the bus with that sub pump story. But I'm going to tell you how the God of my understanding works. I bitched about it. That happened on Monday. So I'm planning in my head, I got to get this done because college starts next week, and I got to do this week, so I'm going to have to leave work early today, come home and fix this pump, and, you know, full of fear, man. All fear-based shit. Self-obsession setting in right then and there. To the point where I wasn't living in the moment, and I was treating her like garbage. You know what I mean? Yelling, screaming. I don't know what I was doing. I just know I was acting like an ass. So, I had the most messed up day at work. I'm a drug and alcohol counselor. Listen, there ain't nothing like going to work every day and hearing a bunch of lies 24/7. But it's okay. Like, I understand this disease and everything, but I just had that particular day, there was this guy who came straight out of prison and, like, jumped up in my office and just freaking out and, like, you know, calling me a sack full of motherfuckers and everything else. And Addict Man's like, Jay, stand up and show this motherfucker how it is. You know what I mean? And I just had to, like, squash that part and put my counselor face on. So it was a bad day at work. So then I didn't get home, and I'm tearing this sub pump out, and I'm putting it in, I'm taking it out of a hole. I put it on its side. I'm plugging it in. I spun the propeller. Started running fine. Unplugged it. Plugged it back in. Unplugged it. Plugged it back in. I said, what the hell? It's running fine. Shoved it back in the hole. Hooked all the piping up. Plugged it in. Nothing. Just humming away. I said, damn it. Okay, ripped everything apart, set it on its side, plugged it in, spun the propeller, it was fine, it was running. Plugged in, plugged out, plug in, plug out, running fine. I said, well, just before I hook everything up again, let me shove it into the hole to make sure it's going to work. So like a dumbass, right, I was all caught up, right, self-obsessed, pissed off, angry, hating the world, I put it in this hole. A piece of pipe, you can't see my hands, about 2 feet, was still attached to it, pointed right at my face. So I plugged it in, and I got nailed with the most disgusting sewer water on the face of the planet. And so I unplugged this thing. I unplugged it, and I sat back after I cussed a few cuss words. And I said, all right, I hear you talking, God. I hear you talking. Anyway, went to buy a new sub pump, put it in, works fine. But see, when I first got here, like if you'd have mentioned the word God to me, I'd have probably ran out the door because I wasn't ready to have it. I wasn't ready to receive it. I didn't understand anything about this so-called God. If he existed, why did all this fucked up shit happen to me for the past 12 years of my life? But as you stick around here and you work these steps, you know, not even the third step. Like, the third steps, you're going to make a decision. Hell, just make the decision to work the rest of the steps. That's all you got to do. Because that's what I did. And then through the rest of the steps, I started to grow spiritually and develop this relationship with the God that I understand. And it's just amazing. It's amazing, and the more I stick around here, the more I'm learning that this God, the so-called God, it becomes less of a knowing thing and more of a feeling thing. So when I was sitting there, I was praying on the bench because of, you know, I was caught up with me. And that's what I did. I started to let myself feel. And right now, I got to tell you, like, I'm floating. I hope that I said something tonight that somebody's going to take with them. If not, I don't care. I know I helped myself out. I'm going to leave you with this little poem I do every time I speak. And I force myself to do this. And I don't... Let me tell you this story real quick. Like, I was in a shower one day. And believe it or not, what time's this meeting over? Really? Well, I could share for another half an hour if I wanted to. I'm just kidding. I'll shut up. But anyway, I was in the shower, and this poem just, like, hit me out of nowhere, and I'll probably go to state and mess it up. But anyway, when I got done, it was stuck right in my mind, ingrained in there. And I didn't want to say it for the longest time. And I'm still talking about the triangle of self-obsession here. Because, you know, growing up, when your father is showing you love with a quick backhand, you're not really thinking about letting your guard down. And I thought, if I shared something as silly as this poem, you guys wouldn't accept me. So for the longest time, I didn't share this poem. So I forced myself to end with it all the time. It goes something like this, if I don't mess it up. I am you, and you are me, and together we can be happy, joyous, and free. It doesn't matter where you come from, and it doesn't matter about your past. The only thing that matters is where we are going, and one day at a time, just for today, we can kick this disease in its ass. I'm an addict named Jason.
I'd like to thank our two speakers. I got something out of it.